Welcome to Inspirational Journeys, a faith-based podcast where your story matters. Come on over, grab a seat on the front porch, and let's talk about the writing life.
Hello, everyone. This is Ann Harrison from Inspirational Journeys, Stories That Matter. And I have something special to announce before I get started with my special guest interview with Clint Arthur, who is the author of Wisdom of the Men. At the end of this podcast episode, and if you're watching on YouTube, there will be a special bonus video where he shares a special surprise story with the listening audience and our viewing audience. So I won't tell you what that is now, but I want you to hang around to the end because there's some special bonus content for you. So without further ado, let's get into today's interview. Welcome to Inspirational Journeys, everyone. My name is Ann Harrison, and today my special guest is Clint Arthur. He is the author of the book Wisdom of the Men. And let me tell you, when we get started, you're going to find out a lot of information that you didn't know that you didn't know. So welcome to the show, Clint.
Thank you, Ann. It's so great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
So let me first of all, ask you to introduce yourself, because that's what I do for my guests, because my thing is nobody can tell your story better than you can, and your story matters.
Okay. I am a guy who quit writing twice, but I was so inspired to be a writer by my high school creative writing teacher, Frank McCourt, who won the Pulitzer Prize for his memoir, that I just kept coming back because I'm a writer. And I started writing again after 8 years, the second time I quit for 8 years. But I started writing again because I'm a writer. And what happened, I was at a men's self-help campfire and the shaman pointed at me across the yellow and orange crackling flames and said, "You don't know it yet, but you're already dead."
Oh my gosh.
I said, "What are you talking about, man? I'm the most successful guy on this team. 8 years ago, I was driving a cab. Now I'm a millionaire. I was living on a little boat. Now I live in a mansion. You're already dead. You just don't know it." And I didn't know what the heck this guy was talking about, but I could not stop thinking about it. I'd wake up in the middle of the night for months. "I'm already dead. What does he mean?" And it came to be New Year's Day of 2009. And I woke up, poured myself a mimosa, got my yellow legal pad and a pen to start writing down my list of goals for the year. As I started doing, once I became successful as a businessman and stopped trying to be a writer for years and years and years. And I asked myself a question inspired by the shaman. I said, "What if he's right? What if I am already dead and I just don't know it? Or what if I only have a year left to live? What if this was going to be the last year of my life? What would I want to accomplish this year?" And I was really surprised when the first thing I wrote down on my list of things I would want to accomplish if this was going to be the last year of my life was I have to write my book about what I learned at the Wharton Business School that helped me to become successful, that helped me to dig myself out of the ditch that had become my life. When I was chasing the dream of becoming a screenwriter and a book writer and some trying to make it in Hollywood as an actor, you know, I was a taxi driver for more than 6 years in Los Angeles, making $500 a week, and $482 of that every month had to go to child support. So I was living on $1,500 a month for years. And writing that book became my first best-selling book, and that was in 2000. I wrote it in 2009, and then I started learning how do you sell books? How do you get the message out? Because it's not enough just to write a book. You want people to read it. That's why I quit writing twice. People wouldn't read. How do you get people to read? That's a whole nother thing. And you know, like, I just wrote my 21st best-selling book. It's called Wisdom of the Men. It's nominated for the Pulitzer Prize. I mean, for me to be a guy who quit writing, but kept coming back because I was inspired to be a writer, and the writer in me was brought out by my creative writing teacher who won the Pulitzer Prize, and now I'm nominated for the Pulitzer Prize. it's truly an amazing thing. And I actually wrote about Frank McCourt in the book. And I was talking to one of my friends earlier today. He goes, it's really fascinating that you're nominated for the Pulitzer Prize because you were inspired by somebody who won the Pulitzer Prize and you actually wrote about him in your book. That's an interesting thing. So that's who I am. How's that?
Wow. And you just answered my first question, because I always ask what inspired you to become a writer. And you just told me in that sentence, or in that far in your introduction. And honestly, you just gave us a little teaser from your book.
Well, you know, I do quite a bit of interviews. One of the things that I learned was that you don't get on interviews usually because of your book. You have to have something that's going to appeal to an audience. Like, mm-hmm. I had to learn, how do you get on TV? That's what I started doing. I hired a publicist for a lot of money. And then my wife said, why do you keep paying this lady? Why don't you just book yourself on TV? And I had to learn how to do that. I had to figure that out. It took a long, 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 long time. And now I've done 111 TV appearances, and I've taught my students who have booked themselves on more than 5,598 TV appearances how to do it. So, you know, being successful as an author is a lot more than just being a good writer. As Robert Kiyosaki says, he's the best-selling author. He's not the best writing author. And if you want to have impact, influence, and income, you have to learn how to get people excited to read your book. That's a whole different thing. And uh-huh. That's one of the things that I've had to really learn. And so that's why I'm a talker. I get onto an interview and I'm going to talk. So you do your best to interrupt as much as you need to. Okay.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I was going to say, I still struggle with that. I've got a poetry book out now, working through writing some other stuff, and I still struggle with that. So I get where you're coming from there. I'm marketing.
Well, let me tell you a quick story about a poetry book. Okay. Because Suzanne Somers, you know who Suzanne Somers is?
I've heard about her. Yeah. The name rings a bell, and you've talked about her a lot in your book.
Okay. So Suzanne Somers was at one time the biggest TV star in Hollywood. She was the star of a sitcom called Three's Company. And
Yeah.
And now Suzanne Somers has 14 New York Times bestselling books. What do you think about that?
Wow, amazing.
It is amazing. And the first New York Times bestselling book she had was her book of poems.
Now the question
she was having, yeah, how? The question is, how do you
do it?
How
did she do it? Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, she was having lunch at the commissary, the cafeteria at Warner Brothers Studios, and just happened to be befriended by Johnny Carson, who had a little TV show called The Tonight Show for decades. And he invited her on his show. And the next day, she was super famous, and her book of poems shot to the number one spot on the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
A book of poems. It's unbelievable.
Because I keep hearing poetry doesn't sell well. So
you got to learn how to do this stuff. I'll tell you what, anything can sell well if you know how to get people excited about buying it. And I think what you're doing with the podcast is a great thing, because you're trying to position yourself as somebody in the eyes of customers and prospects. And hopefully these people will be excited enough about you that they'll want to have a piece of you, which is your book.
Right. So, Paul, talking about your book, I'm going to say this, because I'm an audiobook connoisseur, as you probably have figured out, me being totally blind, but I know there's a lot of people who like to read the print, but I honestly encourage you to get the audiobook, because you're not going to get the same result reading the print as you would listening to the book. Clint, you don't just read it, you talk it.
I perform this book. I am a performer.
Have you ever thought about going into audiobook narration?
I would love to do audiobook narrations. I don't know that there's enough money in it. I mean, I would do it for good books, but thank you, Anne. That's a real compliment that you just gave me. I really appreciate it. I'll tell you a funny story. I struggled in Hollywood for 13 years chasing the Hollywood dream. And I only got one paid acting job in all of those years. And it was for a commercial, an audio commercial. And I was like the voice of the young rebel on this commercial. And there was some guy who was the conservative professorial type on there. And I went in and I read my lines. And when I delivered my first line from the sound booth, there were all these executives from the advertising agency that were there. And they just burst out laughing after I said my line. And I said, "What's so funny?" And they said, "You're exactly what we wanted. We wanted you." Like, and the only money, the only job I ever got in 13 years in Hollywood as an actor was doing one voiceover commercial. So yeah, I think I would love to do more voice work. I believe in performing stuff, and it's obviously it's easier for me to perform my own material, but I do know what I'm doing when it comes to voice, and I appreciate your compliments, and I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah. So I've got to ask this question. Do you still own the Battle Butter business?
The butter business. Yeah, I still own the butter business. I still get orders faxed to me by major corporations like Bellagio and others. It's not my main focus, but I do, you know, when I first started, and I talk about this in my chapter on George Bush, right? You heard that chapter.
Yep.
I met George Bush, President George H.W. Bush, when I was hanging out in the kitchen at the Danielle Boulou Brasserie at the Wynn Resort with one of my butter clients, Chef Philippe Rispoli, who was the executive chef of that restaurant. And he was mixing up a big pot of lobster bisque. You know, and you have those little blender sticks at home. Well, he's got a blender stick the size of a baseball bat that he's stirring up this pot of lobster bisque. I said, "Philippe, you're the executive chef of this restaurant. Why don't you have some sous chef do that?" And he goes, "Because I love it. This is my métier." And I said, he said, "I love it. This is my métier." Now, the métier means his life's passion. His father was a chef. His brother is the top man of a winery in Bordeaux, France. You know, gourmet food is in his family's blood. And just at that moment, I felt some kind of energy coming from another door. And I looked around, and there was three men in suits. And two of them were Secret Service agents. And one of them was George H.W. Bush, the 41st president of the United States. And they go right by us, just minding their own business. They're just looking around, wandering around in the wind, doing whatever they want, because those kind of people do whatever they want. And I go, "Holy cow, that's the president of the United States." And Philippe goes, "Really?" He had no idea. And I run out after them into the dining room, because I had just taken a seminar. And this is early on, it just goes to show you. I had taken this seminar, and in the seminar leader advised us, if you should always carry a little pocket camera, because if you meet anyone important, you should have a camera ready in case you want to get a picture with them. And I had my little digital camera in my pocket. This was before cell phones. Before cell phones had cameras in them, I should say. And I go up to the Secret Service man and I say, "Could I get a picture with the president?" And he goes, "Sure." And I go over to George Bush and I say, "Sir, I voted for you." That's a lie. I did not vote for him. I just told him that because I wanted him to like me. And he said, "Well, thank you, young man." And I said, "Could I get a picture, sir?" He said, "Sure." We take the picture. And then I had the presence of mind to ask him, "Sir, what is the most important thing you ever learned?" And this is the key question that I started asking people when I was, you know, for many years I've been asking people this, and it's been a great question. And he said, "Well, young man, that's a very big question, but I suppose it's that you have to keep doing the things you love in life." Now, I've looked at that photo many times, and in the photo, George Bush is wearing a necktie, and there are little parachute jumpers on the necktie. Everybody knows George Bush loved to jump out of planes with parachutes. For his 80th birthday, he was photographed for Time magazine jumping out of a plane in a parachute. And, you know, he was walking his talk. And I have five presidents that I have met in my life. I've been very blessed. I mean, for a guy like me who was a taxi driver for 6 years, okay? I was the biggest loser in Hollywood for 13 years. For me to have met five presidents of the United States, that shows you a lot. That shows you how much anything is possible. And whether you like their politics or not, you got to respect a man who has become the president of the United States, or even a woman who's become the vice president, because that's a real testament to their life. And, you know, I really believe that if you do the things that you love to do in life, that's a very important thing. And especially today, in today's day and age, where so many people aren't living the way they used to live. They're not living as fully and as richly as they were, because they're afraid of a lot of different things. Not just health issues, but other issues, political issues, crime, all kinds of ideas that people have for why they are not living the way they used to. And I think everybody needs to take George Bush's advice and keep doing the things you love to do in life.
I love that. Now I'm going to ask you the same question you ask a lot of other people. What's the most important thing you've ever learned?
Well, it really comes down to the fact that when I was a little kid, my parents used to argue all the time. Did your parents ever argue when you were growing up, Anne?
No, but I've heard arguments later in life from other people. Yeah, I have been subject to that kind of mess myself. Not from my family, but from in other relationships.
Well, with us, it was like, when weren't they arguing? So me being a little kid, I thought it was my fault. And I made up my mind when I was a little kid, 14 years old, that I was going to go to this thing I read about in a book called the Wharton Business School. And then I read about it and I looked it up in the encyclopedia, and it was a real thing. And in case you don't, you're young. So in case you don't know what an encyclopedia was, that was like Google in books, right? And it turned out Wharton Business School was a real thing. It was the best business school in the world. And I decided when I was 14, that's where I wanted to go. And I thought if I could graduate from the best business school in the world and go on and become somebody special, maybe my parents would stop arguing so much.
I graduated. I'm not as young as you think I am. I'm in my upper 40s.
Well, I mean, that you look pretty young. I thought you were like.
Well, I appreciate that. No. Go ahead.
Yeah, I thought you were in your 30s. But in any case, I graduated from Wharton and I went home to get the attaboys. And what happened? My parents got into the biggest argument of all time. My dad stormed out of the house, slammed the door behind him. And I turned to my mom and I said, you know, Mom, the way he resents you all these years, have you been cheating on Dad? And I'm thinking, wow, where did that idea come from? I never even thought that before in my whole entire life. And then I'm thinking, what kind of a rude son of a gun asks his own mom a question like that? That's the rudest thing I've ever said. And then I'm thinking, why won't she answer the question? And then she says, he's not your real father. Your real father was a doctor at the fertility clinic we were going to for 6 years trying to have you, and you look just like that guy.
Ouch.
Now imagine how you would feel if everything you thought you knew about who you really were at your core, suddenly in an instant, poof, gone. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know who I was anymore. I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up anymore. And I called up the investment bank on the 87th floor of number one World Trade Center. That was ground zero at ground zero, because I think the plane crashed right into that floor. Oof. And I said, sir, I decided I don't want to be an investment banker anymore. Thank you for the offer, but I'm going to pass. And naturally, I moved out to Hollywood. And that's when I began chasing the Hollywood dream. And I wrote 30 screenplays. And I became the biggest loser in Hollywood. And people ask me, do you regret wasting 13 years of your life while all of your fraternity brothers were becoming millionaires and billionaires? And I say, ultimately, no, because that's how I learned the most important thing in business, and really, I think, in life. And that is, who you are is more important than what you actually do or sell. You can be the greatest brain surgeon in the world, the greatest writer in the world, but if no one knows who you are, then you're not going to have the impact, the influence, or the income that you want to have. And it's just going to lead to a life of frustration. And believe me, I felt that frustration for 13 years. people used to get into my taxi cab and they would say, holy cow, what are you doing driving a cab? I had one guy actually say, you're the best looking taxi driver I've ever seen in my life. What the hell are you doing driving a taxi? And I said, well, I'm an actor and a screenwriter. And, you know, there's an argument to be, look, I was working on a movie as a PA, and the executive producer of the movie, it was starring Nicolas Cage, Tommy Lee Jones, and Sean Young. You read the story, you listened to the story in the book. Mm-hmm. And the executive producer of the movie said to me, you're even better looking than Nicolas Cage. And I said, how come I'm not starring in this movie then? And he said, because nobody would give me the millions of dollars I need to make a movie starring you. See, it's who you are is more important than what you actually do or sell. And that's why I say writing books is great. Writing books is fun. That's the fun part. But you got to learn how to get the book out and make people excited to buy it and read it. Because otherwise, you're going to be frustrated because you're going to be basically working in your closet and no one's going to read what you write. You got to learn how to get people excited to read it and consume it and buy it.
Yep, that's what I work with my friend and author coach. That's one of the things we work on. But also, not only am I writing and podcasting, but I'm also going to learn how to become a developmental editor because I feel like that's my calling. That's my, as you put it, métier.
Yeah, now the métier is a really important thing. You know, I mean, you asked me in the pre-interview if I still have my butter business. Yes, I still have my butter business. And it's fascinating because butter was never my métier. Butter was always just, a deal for me. It was just a way for me to make money. And I was very successful in the butter business. I've been super successful. At one point in time, every piece of bread at Bellagio and The Win and Encore was being buttered with 5-star butter. That was a lot of butter. And it was all because it was just deals. It was about deals. But for me, writing and telling stories is my métier. That's my métier.
And helping other authors shape theirs. That's my message.
I love the whole thing about story and teaching how to get on TV and also teaching story because it makes me better as a storyteller. That's what I really love about it because I've been able to develop all kinds of more advanced theories and understandings about stories as a result of teaching others how to be better at story themselves.
Wow. And I have to ask, how has the pandemic affected your writing workshops or how did you make that pivot?
Well, I have always focused on smaller, more high dollar, more high touch workshops. These days, as you probably heard in the book when you were listening to the book, we bought a villa in Acapulco and we bought a really big villa so that we could host workshops here. It sleeps 16 people very comfortably. It's 18,000 square feet. So last year we had 24 events. That's not too bad. Mm-mm. And you know, since I'm only focused in small events with high dollar clients, I don't think I've been as impacted as I would if I was a person who was trying to get more people. Like I know Tony Robbins has only recently started doing live events again, and he's been focusing on virtual events, but I'm not a real huge fan of virtual events. I like being with real people in real rooms, and I really enjoy having people come down to the villa to study story and storytelling or write their books. We've had people come down and write their books here. But I also went to Venice. You know, I did a little workshop in Venice, Italy, while I was writing Wisdom of the Men last summer. And that was a great thing too. I got there and Italy was still open. There was no paperwork required to go into restaurants or hotels.
Wow.
And I was still able to do that. I've been pretty lucky. I've been able to dance between the raindrops, as they say, and get stuff done.
So let's talk about your writing, because that's more or less what that was. That's our passion, right? And before we get into that, I will say that Wisdom of the Men, even though it's the men is the primary audience, women can benefit from this too, because there are a lot of golden nuggets in this book. So I encourage you to go read it or listen to it.
I always thought that women would like this book. And if you look at the reviews on Amazon, and I've only received 5-star reviews, and more than half of them are from women. And I think that, first of all, women are smarter than men. And that's why they're really digging this book, because this book gives women a lot of insight into the minds of men. And I think that women can learn a lot about men from this book. And also, I think anybody will enjoy themselves listening or reading the stories in this book, because this is one of the most important things that I've learned. And that is, everything is about story. There's something magical that happens when you say once upon a time. The person wants to find out, did they live happily ever after or not? And that whole idea of writing in story form, even though it's a book about ideas, it's a book about wisdom, it's a book about lessons, it's a book about how to be successful, it's a book about how to make more money, it's about how to have more impact and influence in the world. It's about a lot of things, but it's all done in story form. And I, you know, it took me a long time to understand, how do you really write stories in a way that can be instructive? And how do you write a nonfiction book in the form of all stories? And that's what Wisdom of the Men is. And that's why people are enjoying it, I think, because I've learned how to tell stories. And from the greatest, you know, Frank McCourt, I had him when I was only 16 years old. In high school for 2 years, two of the 4 years of English classes in high school for me were studying story with Frank McCourt. And he said, you know, I want you to write the stories that you know. You have to write what you know. And what do you know except for the stories of your own life? That's why he had us writing in journals. And that's why I am so loving the memoir as a format. That's why my book is nominated for the Pulitzer Prize in the category of memoir, because I love writing the stories of my life, because I really know what they are and I know what the lessons are. It, you know, let me talk to, can I just talk about how I wrote this book for a little bit, Anne?
Sure. I was gonna ask you to talk about your process.
Okay. This is my process. And Wisdom of the Men is fascinating, because I've written many books in very short amounts of time. One of my books that I've done 10 national TV appearances on, it was a book about speaking and performing. And I had the idea, and 3 days later, I was done writing the book. And 3 weeks later, I did my first appearance on CNN promoting that book. So usually my books have been very quick development processes, but Wisdom of the Men was very different, because I always knew that Wisdom of the Men was going to be my big book. I always knew that. Part of it was because of the genesis of Wisdom of the Men, the way it came out of my men's team, and the goal of the book, which was to create something that would provide timeless wisdom. But the way I wrote that book was, I made a list of all the men in my life who had been influential to me, and I was going to write stories about all the men in my life. And man, if I had done that, this book probably would have been 1,000 pages long. And as I was going through it, about 2 years ago, I realized that if I only wrote stories about the international superstars and the presidents of the United States that I have met in my life, that would probably be 400 pages on its own. And when I came to that realization, I only kept in the stories about the famous people. And this is part of what I've learned over the years, is that right or wrong, like it or lump it, people are more interested in famous people than they are in nobodies. And this is why you as an author need to become somebody special in the eyes of your customers, prospects, readers, fans. if they don't think you're super special, ideally, if they don't think you're famous, they're not going to buy your book. This is why when Suzanne Somers went on The Tonight Show the next day, she became a best-selling author because people thought she was famous and they were excited to buy her book. So I made this list of all the famous people I knew, and that's how I write my, how I wrote this book. I said, okay, I know I'm going to write about Nicolas Cage and Tommy Lee Jones, and then George Hamilton was also in there. I don't know if you knew who George Hamilton was. He used to be really famous. When I met him, yeah, when I met him, I mean, if you look him up, he did a lot of stuff. When I met him, he was working on a game show, and I met him on the game show. You know, so I put those guys on the list, and I knew what the stories were going to be. And then I put Dr. Oz on the list, and then I put Dog the Bounty Hunter on the list, and then I put the most interesting man in the world from the Dos Equis beer commercials, and George Clooney, and Simon Cowell from American Idol.
Yeah.
You know, I and then all the presidents, Jimmy Carter, George Bush, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden. You know, I put only the famous people, and I just made a list of the famous people because I knew what happened. And just like Frank McCourt said, you know, you have to write what you know. And what I found is that unless you write what you know, you just don't have the real authority that you need to give your words the power. Because there's certain nuance that comes when you're writing stories from your own life, because you know exactly what happened and all the details. And that's, I think, what makes this book so great. I love this book, and I'm so happy that I would. It only took me 56 years to figure out how to do this kind of stuff.
Wow. Yeah, we learn every day. So, and it's funny you should mention Jimmy Carter, because I met him, oh gosh, it was in the 90s. I mean, my parents were doing festivals, and my family was doing festivals at that time. We had a chuck wagon, and we were at a festival in Plains when I actually got a chance to meet him. He came to the Winnebago, my grandparents' Winnebago, and we talked about what I was reading, and I don't remember everything, but I do have a picture somewhere of me and him.
He's a great man. I met him in Plains, Georgia also, and Rosalind Carter too. And, you know, he gave a sermon at his church that I was privileged to hear. And he has a universal message. And this is what I love about the wisdom of the man, is that there's so many different messages from so many different wise people.
Right. And you threw a few women in there too, like Suzanne Somers, and you mentioned your wife, Allie. And
There are a few women in there because, you know, women, look, all this book is all about unicorns, outstanding people. And I happen to have met some unicorn women as well. My wife, of course, my daughter's mother, of course, but also Martha Stewart is in this book.
Oh, I haven't gotten
Oprah
that
is in this book. Hillary Clinton is in this book. And Caitlyn Jenner is in this book. And Suzanne Somers. Those are the women.
Wow. So since you say that, you know, all the men that you knew and were influential in your life would take 1,000 pages, are you going to work on a companion to this book, or is this going to be a one and done kind of thing like this?
I've thought about, you know, there are more people in here that are not in the book. There are more people in here in my mind that are not in the book. There are even some pretty famous ones. And I've thought about perhaps writing some more stuff, but right now I'm just focused on promoting Wisdom of the Men. I mean, look, I knew that this was gonna be my life's work masterpiece. See, this is the other thing. Let's go back to Frank McCourt. I realized I wanted to be as great as Frank McCourt, but then I realized I had not written anything that was as good as his book. I've written a lot of books, I've written a lot of best-selling books, but none of them had the quality of the writing that Frank McCourt's book, Angela's Ashes, had. And I don't know that my book has the beautiful prose that his book has. I think it's got its own unique, fresh approach to writing nonfiction and memoir. And I think there's never been a book like it. So I'm very happy with it. And I'm very proud of the way it's turned out. But I knew that I had to do something with all my heart and soul. And that's what I put into Wisdom of the Men. Now, with having put so much of my heart and soul into this book, all I want to do is work on promoting this book. I don't want to get distracted by writing more stuff, because like I said, the writing is the fun, easy part. It's like painting a painting. It's like going in the studio. And especially when I wrote Wisdom of the Men, I went to Venice, Italy for 2 weeks, because a little more about the process of writing this book, I knew that this book had to be amazing. And that's why it took me almost 7 years from the concept to the creation. Unlike most of my books where they're very fast, this one took 7 years because I was intimidated by this process and the prospect of having to write something truly great. And then when I went to, I had my event with Martha Stewart and Ice-T, the rapper, and Jerry from Ben & Jerry's, and Michael Gerber, who wrote a huge best-selling book called The E-Myth, and a few other major entrepreneurial marketing superstars at Carnegie Hall. And after Carnegie Hall, I took my wife on a little celebration tour of Europe. And one of the places we went to was Venice. I had never been to Venice, Italy before. And when we arrived in Venice, Italy, I was so inspired by the architecture and the ingenuity and the creativity and just the impossibility of a city like Venice. Have you ever been there, Anne?
No.
It's a city built out of the water. It's unbelievable how there are all these buildings coming straight out of the water, a whole entire city. I don't know how they did it, even though I've read about it. It's just unbelievable. And the architecture is so beautiful. And I, as soon as I landed on that island, or it's a collection of like 300 islands, I said to myself, wow, if I could come back here for a long enough period of time, I could write Wisdom of the Men here, because I'd be so inspired by this place. And it took me almost 2 years, because of global circumstances with the whole health situation going on in the world, I couldn't get back to Italy until almost 2 years later. And as soon as I could get back, we went and I wrote this book. It was easy for me to write this book because I had my list. And then what do? I open up my iPhone, I record the stories as I'm talking, and I've already told these stories. See, like Frank McCourt, I used to go to class. Why did we love Frank McCourt's class? What was so great about creative writing with Frank McCourt? Because he would come in every day and tell us stories about his life in Ireland. That's what he would do. And what was he doing in that process? He was preparing to write his memoir, Angela's Ashes, which was about his impoverished childhood in Ireland.
Yep.
And I have done the same exact thing, because as a speaker, I've figured out that if you want to sell books, one of the most important things you can do is become a speaker. Because people will see you speak at an event, and then they'll want to keep a piece of you, and they'll buy your book to take home a piece of you. That's the psychology of the whole thing. Well, in the process of telling all my stories over the course of being a speaker since 2000, I became a speaker in 2011. Since 2011, I've been telling these stories over and over and over, and that's been the developmental process for my book, Wisdom of the Men. And it became easy for me to just wake up, go out and wander around the streets of Venice, Italy, walk around the canals, find little courtyards and pace up and back and forth, and dictate the stories into the voice memo app on my phone, have those voice memos transcribed. Those transcripts then became the rough draft. Then I edited those transcripts, and that became the first draft, and then I went back through and edited them again. That became the second draft. Then I recorded the audio of the book and made any further corrections that were required while I was recording the audible version of the book that you're listening to. That became the third draft of the book, and then I published the hardcover. That's how the process worked.
So you self-published it, right?
Yeah, that was self-published through Amazon on CreateSpace.
Oh, wow, which is no longer available now.
Actually, it used to be called CreateSpace. Now it's called KDP.
Yep, Kindle Direct Publishing. Yep.
Yep, and they even have a hardcover possibility. So yeah,
I saw
I published this book as a hardcover.
Mm-hmm. And I read Angela's Ashes. Well, I got it as what the audiobook. It's not what you would consider audiobook today. The Library of Congress has a program called the National Library Service for the blind and, well, they used to say physically handicapped, but now they say the blind and print handicapped or print disabled. And they actually had one of their narrators narrating the book. So yeah, I listened to Angela's Ashes years ago.
I listened to it while I was on a trip in Hawaii a few summers ago. And I listened to the Audible, which was narrated by Frank McCourt.
Oh, wow.
And it was like listening to a ghost, Anne.
It
was so freaky for me because this was the man and he sounded basically the same. He sounded a little older and a little wiser, but he sounded like the same Frank McCourt I knew, telling us the same stories he told us when I was in high school, when I was just a little kid. And here I was like 40 years later, listening to him telling me these same stories. And wow, it was such a freaky experience for me, but I love it.
Bet that brought back memories.
Oh, it was fantastic. And for me, it's a particularly good way to consume. I read the book many times. When I was pursuing the Hollywood dream, I used to come home after a hard day of trying to become somebody and getting the world slapping me in the face every day and telling me I sucked and that I would never be anything year after year after year. And I would come home to my little boat and I would crawl into the V berth, which is the bunk in the front of the boat. And I would put on my audio tape of Jewel. She had a CD that she produced, supposedly self-published her own CD called Jewel, and, you know, became famous from that. And I would listen to Jewel and I would pick up Angela's Ashes and flip to any given page and just flip to any random page and start reading until I fell asleep. That's how I spent many, many years on the boat trying to hang on to hope that I could make it. I used to think if Frank McCourt could make it, then I could make it. And I used to think that if Arnold Copleson could win the Oscar for Best Picture, then I could win the Best Picture Oscar because he was my best friend's father who gave me that job on the movie. But making it in Hollywood is a completely different thing. It's not about how good you are. It's only about who you are. And I was nobody. I was just a taxi driver. I was the biggest loser in Hollywood.
Wow.
And I've had to learn how to be somebody. And hopefully I've become somebody enough so that, you know, I feel like all of these years since 2010, when I really got serious about learning how to be successful as an author and have more impact, influence, and income by going on TV and being a speaker and meeting all these giant celebrities and winning awards and publishing best-selling books. Those are the things that successful people do to get their work read. All of this has been preparing me for this moment in time when my great book, this book that I put so much of my life into, is nominated for the Pulitzer. And hopefully the people who are the powers that be in deciding who gets the Pulitzer Prize will see the wisdom in giving it to me so I can follow in the footsteps of my mentor. I think, first of all, I think the book deserves it. And second of all, I think it'll be a great thing for the Pulitzer Committee. It'll be a great thing for the Pulitzer Prize itself to have this story of how a teacher inspired his student to be a writer and the student followed in his footsteps by winning the Pulitzer like the teacher. I think it'll be a great thing.
Wow, that does sound awesome. So do you have any writing tips and advice you'd like to share with the listeners and viewers?
I've given you a few already. Write what you know, and I say speak what you know into your audio recorder. I've given you my whole process of developing
yeah, that's right.
Books, right? I've given you the process of developing. I've given you the process of editing. I've given you the process of actual production. I don't type anything anymore except when I'm editing a little bit, I'll do some typing. I do my own layouts. I will say this, you know, I've been using Apple Pages for decades. And I really believe that rather than try to figure out some fancy writing program, just stay focused on either Apple Pages or Microsoft Word, whichever you prefer, and learn how to use that, because that's what I've been using to self-publish my books. I produce them in Apple Pages, I output them as a PDF or whatever they need for Kindle, and that's how I do it. So I've become a visual producer of my writing as well, because I want it to look good and I want it to feel like a real book, and I want it to be consumable easily by my audience. One other thing I will say about this process is that it's very important to tell stories no matter what you're writing. And I would even say in poetry. Do you write stories in your poems, Anne?
Some, yes, but more, I write more fiction than I do poetry, honestly.
Okay. I think that if you could put story into poems, I think you'd increase the demand for your poetry as well. And really, everybody has to learn how to tell stories. And when you're telling stories, show us, don't tell us. Don't tell us about what happened. Put us in the moment. That's what a story is really all about. And I have a little short formula that I teach my students about story. Okay, what is a story? What happened? What did you say? What did they say? And then here are the key things. What did you think? And how did you feel? Those are the keys to storytelling. What happened? What did you say? What did they say? What did you think? And how did you feel?
Right. And I've been working with, you know, talking to an author friend of mine and about story structure and development and things like that, because, you know, I think that's important. And I had to learn that craft myself, because that's, you know, that's not something that comes, that's easy to come by. So, and I think it's important, and because stories do matter. They matter so much. So what's your take on, I've heard a lot of people say write every day. What do you think, what is your take on that advice?
Well, you know, I have been writing so long, and I know a lot of people write every day, but that's not how I work. I work on a more project basis, because I have been really focusing on marketing so much, because you generally make more money on the back of the book than you do on the book. What does that mean? Well, for example, my previous book was called Celebrity Entrepreneurship. That's about how do you position yourself as a celebrity in the eyes of your customers and prospects, whether you're an author, a speaker, a coach, any kind of advisor or expert or consultant. You want to be seen as a celebrity in the eyes of your customers and prospects or your readers, because what the real goal of the book is for them to hire you to do whatever your nonfiction book shows them that you do. And I, as a result, I don't write every day, but here's the thing. I write by talking. I write by telling my stories. And in that sense, I do a lot of interviews. I do a lot of podcasts. I do a lot of radio. I do a lot of TV appearances. And what do? On those appearances? I tell stories. In that sense, I am constantly revising and editing my writing day after day after day and perfecting the stories that I'm telling, because no two tellings of the story are ever the same. The way I told you the stories today were different than the way I said them in the book, and mm-hmm. They're different every interview that I do.
Wow. I like that. I mean, I honestly have to admit that I'm a better writer than speaker sometimes, because when I do my solo episodes, if I don't stop myself, I will ramble and be all over the place. So that's just a little behind the scenes about me, but that's this is more about you. So where can people find you online?
Let me just address that, and then I'll be happy to let you know where to find me. You know, I had a radio show on 77 WABC Radio in New York City for almost 3 years. And the process that you're going through is developmental. You're still young. You know, as I said, I'm a lot older than you. And you're still young and still possibly finding the power of your own stories and finding the power of your own voice. And this process that you're doing of your solo episodes, you may feel like you're rambling, but you've got to go through this process of saying the words and having them be not as good as they could be, and then better, and then better, and then good, and then hopefully great, because that's the process. And you can only get there by doing the work. And that's the thing that people don't like. One of the reviews that was written about my book pulled that quote out of the book, and it said, "Everybody wants home runs, but nobody wants to do the work." Well, I've done the work. When we met the Rolling Stones, we were on a vacation in Hawaii. We used to go to the Royal Hawaiian Hotel every summer for 4 years for the summer. And one summer I was sitting by the pool, adding people onto my LinkedIn. I have more than 21,000 connections on LinkedIn. Wow. That I've added myself. Okay, I did the work. And I got an email, and it was from a charity, and it said, if you donate $25,000 to the charity, you can get to be VIP guests at a Rolling Stones concert in Europe and meet the band and get photos with the band. And I showed it to my wife, and she said, wow, that is amazing, but $25,000, that's crazy. And I said, yeah, that's crazy. Next day, I got another email, and just on a lark, I pressed the button and my iPhone filled in the autocomplete. And next thing I knew, I was confirming the purchase. And I said, guess what, Allie? We're going to see the Rolling Stones. She said, you did not pay $25,000. And I said, yes, I did. She goes, well, I guess it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. I go, it is once in a lifetime. And we go there and we meet the band, and I said, we walk into the room where they are, and I shake hands with Mick Jagger, and he's a very nice man. And I said, Sir Mick, what's the most important thing you ever learned? Because I knew I didn't have a lot of time. And he said, you can't always get what you want, but if you try, sometimes you might find you get what you need. And I know it's a line from the Rolling Stones song, but Hey, he's Mick Jagger, and he can say anything he wants. But more important than that, it's really, really true.
Yes.
You know? It really is. In this life, you can't always get what you want, but if you try, sometimes you find you get what you need, and that's more important. You got to get what you need. Now, I took that photo and I walked out of that photo shoot feeling like $1 million, because I knew I looked good. I knew I looked good. But my wife was really nervous for months and months and months. She was nervous because she didn't know if she was smiling, and she didn't know if she was going to look good, because she had not done the work that I'd been doing. She hadn't been meeting all the celebrities. She hadn't been going on all the TV appearances. She wasn't sure if she looked good. And here's the photo. I'm going to hold it up so people can see. Now, you know, there we are. She looked good. But she wasn't able to enjoy it, because she didn't know she looked good. But I knew I looked good. And that's because I had done the work. And that's really what you're doing right now. You got to do the work so that when you get ready to write your life's work masterpiece, you're going to know that it's going to be great. Just the way I knew when I was writing Wisdom of the Men that it was great. And when I got done writing it, I was standing in St. Mark's Square in Venice, Italy. And I thought to myself, wow, is that all there is? I had just done this massive thing. And I really felt like, wow, is that all there is? And I thought to myself, well, that's everything I've got. It's got to be good enough, because that's all I've got. That's my whole heart and soul. And if that's not good enough, then I don't know what could possibly be good enough, because I put everything I had into this book. And I've worked all these years to get ready to do it. And I've paid my dues, and I've worked hard, and I've taken all the rejection anyone could possibly take. And I've done everything I could possibly do to study and learn to be as good as I could possibly be for this moment. So if that's not enough, I don't know what could possibly be, but so that has to be enough. And that's where you're going to get to one day, hopefully, where you're going to know that it's enough. Like, I knew that that had to be enough.
Wow.
People can find me at clint.com, clintt.com.
And there's also, you also have another website, wisdomofthemen.com, where people can watch all your bonus videos, right?
Yeah, when you get the book, you can then get all the bonus videos.
Because you talk about those in the book all the time.
Yep. Yeah, well, I want people, hey, look, it's more than just a book. You know, that's one of the things about you that you have to learn about how to get people to want to read your book. Hey, it's more than just a book. It's not just a book about where I'm talking. You also get a huge collection of bonus videos with Dr. Oz, Suzanne Summers, Martha Stewart, Ice-T, The Most Interesting Man in the World, Dog the Bounty Hunter, Nigel Farage, Dr. Drew, Dr. Oz, a huge collection. Evander Holyfield, world champion boxer. I mean, there's so many amazing videos. The 15th Surgeon General of the United States, she's the first woman and the first Black Surgeon General of the United States. Dr. Jocelyn Elder's video is in there. There's so many great videos in the bonus collection, and you get that also when you get the book. So I tried to make it worth, you know, 100,000 times your investment in the book. And I hope people feel that way. And it seems from the reviews that people feel that way.
Wow, nice. So I had another question, but it went right out of my head, and that's how it goes when you don't script. But I don't, because if I try to read the script, I'm gonna stumble. So I want to thank you for being on the show, and I also want to say that we challenge you to go out there and read to get inspired, write something inspiring, and share your creation with the world. For when you've touched one life, you've touched thousands. Thanks for joining us on Inspirational Journeys, and have a blessed day, everybody.
Inspirational Journeys will be back after this.
Hey guys, this is Anne from the Inspirational Journeys podcast, and my special guest, Joe Templin, has an offer for my listeners and viewers. Take it away, Joe.
Anne, thank you. And again, thank you for bringing me on. This was a wonderful conversation. I'm glad that I could reach out and help your people grow. And to continue to help them to grow, we have an offer. If they go to the website everyday-excellence.com, and use the code INSPIRATIONALJOURNEYS at checkout from the shop, they can get a 10% discount on anything there to be able to help them with their personal journey to grow and inspire others.
You heard it here, folks. You get a 10% discount on everything in the store at everyday-excellence.com using promo code INSPIRATIONALJOURNEYS. Happy writing, and celebrate the day. Now for our bonus content, the story of Fantastic Frank.
No.
Hey guys, we are back with Inspirational Journeys, and there's one more story that Clint wants to add, so I'm going to tag this on to the end here.
Okay. The book is all about the super famous people that I've met, right? However, there are a few people in there who are celebrity entrepreneurs, who are people who are special in the eyes of their customers and prospects. Some of them are really famous, like Tony Robbins. You know, a lot of people think he's famous. I could show you video after video of people saying, Tony who? Because he's really a celebrity entrepreneur. Then there's Hal Elrod, who's one of my students, who wrote a very inspirational book called The Miracle Morning, about how when you wake up super early in the morning, it creates miracles in your life. He's one of my students. He sold 2 million self-published books, Anne.
Wow.
with a royalty of $8 a book. You can do the math on that. Mm. And then there's two more people who are much less well known. They're almost unknown people. One of them came out of my membership in a $25,000 a year mastermind. And he was a speaker. He had a tremendous disability. It's called osteogenesis gigantor or something like that. He has brittle bones. He's only 3 feet tall. He would ride around in a wheelchair, and it's a rare bone disease. And his name was Sean Stevenson. He was one of my speaking mentors. In addition to studying story and writing with Frank McCord, a Pulitzer Prize winner, and studying story and writing with Arnold Copelson, who won Best Picture Academy Award for his movie Platoon, and Robert McKee. I took Robert McKee's seminar in Hollywood 2 times. He's the top story expert in Hollywood. His book is called Story, and his seminar is called Story. And I paid $400 to attend his weekend seminar 2 times, at both of which he said, yes, it really does happen. You know, people do sell their screenplays on spec in Hollywood for a lot of money, $250,000, $500,000, even $1 million. It does happen. And then he paused for emphasis and looked out at the 400 people in the auditorium, at the Writers Guild of America auditorium. And he said, it will never happen to any of you, but it does happen. So in addition to studying all of that story and writing with those luminaries, and Oprah Winfrey is another mentor of mine in terms of story. I've been very impressed by her storytelling and in meeting her. And I'll close this out with a quote from her if you remind me. But I also have studied speaking, and that's another aspect of storytelling, especially for a person like me who has come to the point in my writing where I speak my writing. And one of my speaking mentors was this man, Sean Stevenson. But the disability story that I want to tell you is about Fantastic Frank, who is one of my students. Fantastic Frank calls me up one day. I was expecting his call because one of my other students referred him to me for Celebrity Launchpad. And she said he has a traumatic brain injury, so you can expect that it's a little bit different when you talk to him on the phone. The next day he calls me up. Hi, Clint. My name is Fantastic Frank, and Tracy Repchuk told me to call you, and I just want to know that if I pay you your $10,000 to attend your Celebrity Launch Pad, do you promise that I will get on TV? And I said, Frank, I guarantee that if you do what I tell you to do, that you will book yourself on at least 3 TV appearances, or I will give you back all of your money plus $1,000. And he said, okay, well, that's good enough for me, because I've paid a lot of money to a lot of other seminar leaders and I never got anything from it. But if you guarantee that I am going to be on TV, then I will give you my credit card right now. He came to Celebrity Launchpad, and God bless him, he did every single thing I told him to do. And he was one of the most fascinating students I've ever had. And he graduated into my advanced coaching program, and I went with him when Fox Los Angeles interviewed him to do their feature segment on him. He was featured on Fox LA. He was featured on ABC Chicago. He did 13 TV appearances coming out of Celebrity Launchpad on every show. And then one day, years later, I'm walking down the road in Tennessee. I was speaking at a conference for IT professionals and cybersecurity professionals in Tennessee. And I wanted to get my steps. That's my exercise, because I'm old and I need to protect my body so I don't do all kinds of crazy exercises. I just walk. And I'm walking from my hotel to the supermarket to go buy some water. And my phone rings. And I see it's Fantastic Frank on the caller ID. And I say, hey, Frank, how are you doing? And he goes, hi, Clint, this is Fantastic Frank. How are you? And I said, I'm good, Frank. And he said, good, you're Clint Arthur, you're not good. You're fantastic. And I said, you are right, Frank. I am fantastic. And ever since that day, I don't care who is calling or how I feel or who you are watching this right now. If you are walking around without a traumatic brain injury or even with a traumatic brain injury, if you're walking around on this earth and you're breathing air and you're healthy enough to do the things you want to do and to get out of bed in the morning and to lead a productive life, when people ask you how you are, you need to say that you are fantastic.
I love it.
And I'll tell you the Oprah thing to just close this out. When I met Oprah, she told us the story of how her parents met one time under an oak tree. And from that one meeting under an oak tree, Oprah Winfrey was conceived and born into this world and has gone on to have the impact and influence and income that she has to make that impact on the world. So, wow, that's so amazing. That was her story that really blew my mind. And you need to know story and develop story. And then when I met her, I said, Oprah, what's the most important thing you ever learned? And without a moment of hesitation, she said, you are responsible for your own success.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for that little bonus segment or bonus video. We're gonna put that up there. And I will introduce it at the beginning of the podcast. So thank you guys for watching, for sticking with me to the end and watching this bonus video. Remember, your story matters, folks. This has been Inspirational Journeys. Have a blessed day. Are you looking for a professional, knowledgeable, friendly, and detailed-oriented editor who provides high-quality editing services at reasonable prices? Why not give PlotStitch Editorial Services a try? As your friendly PlotStitch editor, I will help you turn your messy manuscript into a story that engages readers from start to finish. Services include refining story structure, character development, filling in plot holes, show versus tell, passive versus active voice, dialogue enhancements, copy editing, and proofreading. Send queries to theplotstitch@gmail.com. That's theplotstitch@gmail.com. PlotStitch Editorial Services, bringing stories that matter to life.
Hey everybody, this is Anne from the Inspirational Journeys podcast, and I'm here today with
Teresa from Struggling Blessed But Not Alone podcast. How are you today, Anne?
I'm doing good. How about you, Teresa?
I'm good. So what's up?
I've got some news for you.
Really? What's that?
Did you know that our listeners can support our podcasts?
No. Can you please share more about that?
Okay, so while you're listening to our podcasts on your favorite podcast platform, hit the Support This Podcast button. With your contribution of 99 cents, $4.99, or $9.99 a month, you're helping us achieve our goals.
Wait a minute, Anne. Are you telling me all that our listeners have to do is hit that support button and they could give a donation?
That's right.
Wow. Hey guys, thanks for wanting to do that for us. Have a blessed day.
So I challenge you today to go out there and read to get inspired, write something inspiring, and share your creation with the world. For when you've touched one life, you've touched thousands. You've been listening to Inspirational Journeys, Stories That Matter, with your host, Anne Harrison. If you like what you've heard on today's episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, share it with your friends, and leave a rating or review on your favorite podcast platform. Visit my website at annewritesinspiration.com, subscribe to my YouTube channel, And follow me on Facebook and Pinterest at Anne Writes Inspiration and on Twitter at AnneWrites75 for more inspirational content. Thanks for listening, and remember, your story matters.